Welcome to episode 174 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for February 9th, 2011. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, bike accident data seems to indicate that cyclists are at fault in accidents. Top Gear host says cyclists deserve it. Mountain bike liability bill fails in the Colorado Senate, and Rahm Emanuel talks about his plans for Chicago cycling. Plus, the status of the Contador case, Ricardo Rico seems to do it again, the Tour of Qatar, and more. Plus, an interview with Ciclismo Classico about the upcoming trip to the Maratona in Italy, and finally, setting up your indoor trainer room. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome to episode 174 of the Fredcast. Great to have you back here with us. This episode of the Fredcast is sponsored by Jensen USA. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast to get some of the most amazing selection of bicycle products on the internet at phenomenal prices with unbeatable customer service. By the way, I had the opportunity to stop by Jensen USA's Southern California facility about a week and a half ago and visit with the entire team, seeing their huge new warehouse, their really capable and well-staffed customer service department, and I learned all about why it is that they're able to provide such great service, fast turnaround, just to really take care of the customer. And not only do they take care of the customer, but they're also stewards of their local cycling community. Right outside their back door is a huge network of mountain bike trails, and when they moved into the new facility, they took over the job of helping to ranger those trails to make sure that the trail maintenance is done, that litter is picked up, that everyone is doing the right thing to not only ensure access to the trails, to keep them safe, but also to take care of the local environment. What they're doing is phenomenal. If you want to support them, well, it's very easy. Go ahead and buy your cycling products from Jensen USA. So go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast or go to thefredcast.com and click the Jensen USA link on the right-hand side. There's new deals there every week that are special, but you're going to find everyday great deals just by shopping at Jensen USA. Give them a try once, and like a lot of your fellow Fredcast listeners, you won't go anywhere else. That's jensenusa.com/thefredcast. We thank them so much for their support, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Well, let's get right into the news for this week's episode of the Fredcast. And the first piece of news comes to us from San Francisco and a website called baycitizen.org. Now, Bay Citizen says that they were founded in 2010 as a nonprofit, nonpartisan news organization dedicated to fact-based independent reporting on civic and community issues in the San Francisco Bay Area. Now, the reason we bring them up is that Bay Citizen has done a little bit of research, and they've looked through every police report in the San Francisco area over the last 2 years, and they've put this together into some data. Number one, first of all, mapping various neighborhoods to show where bike accidents occur, whether there are particular areas that are more likely to have bike accidents, whether there are areas that have bike accidents on a seasonal basis, and they also took a look at who is at fault. According to baycitizen.org, quote, taking an overview of all bike accidents, including solo bike crashes, bikers bear the most responsibility. Cars are a close second. Continuing, according to the website, quote, the data provided by the police department shows that over the last 2 years, drivers were likely at fault about 60% of the time and cyclists 40% of the time in accidents in which a car and bike were involved, and they had 763 cases. The same holds true for accidents involving bikes and trucks. Fault in bike accidents with pedestrians was split roughly evenly, with parked cars Bikes were almost always at fault, except when a dooring was involved, and it should not be overlooked that the one crash with a horse-drawn carriage was caused by the buggy driver. But when they aggregated the data, including bike versus car, bike versus buggy, or bike versus pedestrian, or just a simple solo crash, they found that cyclists were at fault 50% of the time, cars 40% of the time, followed in the single digits by trucks, taxis, pedestrians, and parked cars. The report is detailed and comprehensive, but you have to remember that they were only looking at accidents involving bikes that were reported to the police department. How many times have you or someone you know been involved in an accident or a near miss that went unreported, or, as we've heard time after time from friends and colleagues alike, how many times have you heard or been involved in an incident in which the police refused to take a report? So, of course, the data does need to be taken with a grain of salt. Having said that, I'd encourage all urban cyclists and drivers to read the report. Yes, there's links in the show notes, of course, because I think that it points out some areas in which all of us can improve. Look, we all know that it's our goal and hope that motorists become, well, how about if they just notice us out there on the road? But at least we hope that they will become more courteous towards cyclists. And of course, I'm constantly asking on the show that we all behave as good cycling citizens. But let's take a look at some of the causes of some of these accidents, and I think that they will sound familiar. According to the report, the leading cause of bike accidents is speeding by both bikes and cars, with about 14% of all bike accidents caused by going too fast. A very close second, again, this won't come as a surprise to most of us, is turning violations, also at 14%. And then third are the much feared doorings caused by drivers opening their doors into the paths of unsuspecting cyclists. As for the cause of accidents that are related to the cyclist, the leading violation that they assigned to cyclists was speeding. A total of 120 accidents out of 1,147 over the past 2 years were caused by speeding, according to the police reports. Cyclists running red lights was the cause of 64 crashes, and 44 were caused by bikes rolling through stop signs or crosswalks, while 40 were caused by cyclists not obeying the rules governing cycling along the side of the road. Once again, there are links in the show notes. There's no doubt that people will find controversy on either side in this report. But as I said, I think that it provides good lessons for all of us who ride our bikes in urban environments. Now, following in the theme of the previous story about cyclists and drivers and the problems that occur on the roads, the BBC's television show Top Gear is hosted by Jeremy Clarkson and Richard Hammond. Now, Hammond is a fairly avid cyclist and was talking recently on the show to Mr. Clarkson about the fact that a lot of cyclists are now wearing helmet cams as a way to catch motorists in the act when they misbehave, because as I mentioned a few moments ago, sometimes police officers aren't willing to take the report from cyclists. As Mr. Hammond was relaying the story, he was cut off by Clarkson, who said, quote, "But cyclists deserve it." When Hammond tried to get him to stop, Clarkson responded with, quote, "But they do deserve it, honestly. The other week, no, honestly, there I am sitting in a traffic jam in London, and a Frenchman, he tried to cycle between the pavement and my car. And after he'd removed most of the paint with his brake handle thing, he came round to the driver's door to tell me off in that silly accent French people have." To which Hammond said, "What, a French accent?" Clarkson said, "Yes, that." And I said to him, "Listen, if you just work hard, you can have a car." Hammond said, "You're exactly the reason why I want a camera on my bicycle helmet when I cycle." Clarkson says, "Why?" Hammond says, "When idiots like you get out of their car having cut me up." Clarkson said, "Who pays the road tax?" By the way, parenthetically, I'm sure our friend Carlton Reed has something to say about that. Hammond says, well. Clarkson says, I'm sorry. I don't mind if cyclists want to come on the road with their silly Victorian distractions. I'm not bothered, but they must behave themselves. Well, you can imagine the response that ensued as a result of this. Twitter, Facebook, and the internet literally lit up with electrons as people began to rail against Clarkson's disparaging remarks. Now, I didn't personally see the show, but I did read the transcripts and I saw all of the complaining that was going on the internet. So, you know, we are taking it, or we could be taking it, a bit out of context, but it does seem to me that Clarkson was taking on the attitude that a lot of motorists have about cyclists. We have no right to be on the road. We're not paying registration fees or road tax. Carlton Reed can tell you about that at ipayroadtax.com. The point is, however, and the point that we're trying to get across to motorists, which, and I just don't understand why they can't get this through their steel encased skulls. You're in a 3,000-5,000-pound vehicle powered by gas that can go upwards of 100 plus miles an hour. We're riding out there with nothing between us and your vehicle other than Lycra and little polystyrene on our heads. That puts us in a dangerous circumstance. We do deserve to have some space between your car and our heads. We would like to go home to our wives and husbands and girlfriends and boyfriends and children, just like you do at the end of your workday. No matter what you drive, no matter how much money you make, no matter what I ride or how much money I make or don't make, we're all human beings and we all do deserve the same right to life as each other. Now, interestingly enough, while here this was Clarkson making the negative remarks, you have to realize that recently it was Hammond who had to apologize for his negative remarks about people from Mexico. Specifically, he said on his blog, quote, look, I was talking about the cartoon characters and Western movies we all watched as kids, and I'm really sorry if I've offended anyone. Yes, we were stereotyping on Top Gear, and yes, that can go wrong, as it rather has, but it can also be quite funny, and that's what we were hoping to do. We Brits are often portrayed as clumsy snobs in bowler hats with brown teeth and terrible food, and it's funny. The BBC knows that. And that's why they've stated clearly that stereotype comedy is allowed within BBC guidelines and programs where the audience has clear expectations of that being the case. I don't think anyone will disagree that Top Gear falls into that category. Nevertheless, if we really have upset anyone, if they really feel I was expressing a genuinely held view that I believed Mexico to be populated by blokes in big hats and mustaches, then I'm very sorry. Clearly, I don't really believe this any more than I imagine France to be full of amorous cyclists with onions round their necks. Of course, if I really did believe in these things, don't you think the joke would rather be on me? Well, I think the joke actually is on both of you, because while, yes, I'm sure it's within BBC guidelines that stereotype comedy is allowed, Top Gear is not Monty Python, nor is it Benny Hill. It's a show about cars. And if you have fans who are following you and your every word about cars and the way, the proper way to drive those cars and to behave on the road, I think that you should behave with a little bit of that responsibility in mind before you go off talking about how cyclists, quote, deserve it. Back in 1994, President Bill Clinton here in the United States signed a law that came to be known as the General Aviation Revitalization Act. The gist of the law was that the government sought to reduce the liability exposure of small airplane manufacturers as a way to reinvigorate the industry. By reducing the liability small airplane manufacturers would have in the length of time during which liability would attach to those manufacturers, thereby allowing them to increase their manufacturing capacity and increase the popularity and the accessibility of general aviation or private pilots. Well, Lawmakers in the state of Colorado recently tried to do the same thing when they introduced Senate Bill 36 in the state of Colorado, which sought to limit liability for mountain bike area operators and providers of other mountain biking services within the state. The bill was sponsored by Senator Greg Brophy, a Republican from Ray, Utah, who sought to protect trail owners, equipment renters, and guides from lawsuits stemming from injury to riders, except in cases of intentional injuries or willful and wanton conduct. The title of the bill was concerning the limitation of civil liability for injuries resulting from the inherent risks of mountain bicycling. Sounds like a good idea. Sounds like a great way to ensure that Colorado remains a mecca for mountain bikers from around the world, allowing that state to maintain its competitiveness against other places. Specifically, I think for Colorado, perhaps some of the Canadian resorts, for instance, in Blackcomb and Whistler. Supporters argued that fear of lawsuits prevents people from getting involved in mountain biking, and that recreation areas could see a decrease in liability insurance if the bill passed. According to Colorado Ski Country USA president and chief executive Melanie Mills, quote, "These are adrenaline-fueled sports that people want to participate in." And Colorado Mountain Bike Association president Jason Bertolacci said that without such a law, Colorado risks falling behind other mountain bike destinations, such as the aforementioned British Columbia. The law failed on a 5-4 party line vote in the Colorado Senate, perhaps partially because the Colorado Trial Lawyers Association said that the bill was too broad. Now, the bill can be reintroduced in the next legislative session next year, although Senator Brophy has not decided whether or not to do so. Here in the United States, President Barack Obama's chief of staff recently resigned. His name is Rahm Emanuel, and he did so in order to run for the mayor's office in Chicago, Illinois. You may have also heard that there were some legal wranglings over Emanuel's residency and whether or not he would indeed be eligible to be on the ballot because he has been living in Washington, D.C., serving as the president's chief of staff. That seems to have been mostly settled at this point, and he is running for the mayor of Chicago. And as part of his campaign, Emanuel, a cyclist and triathlete, recently detailed his plans for the city of Chicago vis-a-vis bicycles should he be elected mayor. Apparently, he has a 3-point agenda, which includes adding 25 miles of bike lanes per year, which would add 100 miles of protected lanes by the end of his first term. He also plans on creating what's called the Bloomingdale Trail, which would be a $75 million, about 3-mile-long trail built along Bloomingdale Avenue on the northwest side of Chicago to allow commuters to get to downtown Chicago, and finally, for children in the area to get to and from 12 nearby schools. He also said that he would push for a city ordinance to require certain downtown buildings to offer protected bike storage facilities to increase the number of cyclists. Now, Emanuel is well known around Washington, D.C., specifically in Washington's Rock Creek Park, which is between the Potomac and Georgetown. Recently, according to Mother Jones, he was seen, quote, on a Sunday afternoon bicycle ride through Washington's Rock Creek Park, revealing some of the qualities that innocent bystanders find so annoying. For one thing, wearing tight biking shorts and a helmet, no shirt, he looks cocky, they continue. Another problem is the presence of others on the narrow bike trail shouting, left! Rahm whizzes by hapless yuppies and their children. His furious pace doesn't slow for tight corners or low overhangs. Most people find bike rides relaxing, but Emanuel rides as if he's being chased by the headless horseman. Well, that's going to do it for the general news for this week's episode of the Fredcast. And before we get to the racing news, I just wanted to mention another one of our sponsors, and that is Epic Rides, the creators and producers of the Epic Rides DVD series, and I have been taking advantage of those quite a bit lately as I ride my trainer. We'll talk about that again in a moment. As I ride my trainer to get ready for my difficult trip to Italy coming up in July. And I've been enjoying specifically a couple of DVDs, the Epic Vermont, Epic Acadia, and also the Epic Tucson DVDs for a couple of reasons. One, for instance, in the case of Epic Vermont, I can listen to a great Cadence Revolution mix of music designed specifically for that ride. Also, because there are power profiles that I can download from the Epic Planet website that will vary the resistance on my CompuTrainer as I ride, so that as the riders head up a hill in Vermont, I'm feeling that in my rear wheel as well. And finally, and I keep mentioning this, because the Epic Planet Epic Rides DVDs are, in a word, gorgeous. The filming quality, the cinematography, the shot choices are just spectacular. I love the heads-up display telling me how much time is left in a particular climb, how much time is left in the entire DVD, and the ride profile that's constantly on the screen. And occasionally, when there's a scenic or specific site that the producers think that they should point out, it pops up on the screen so that you know what you're looking at. I have really enjoyed using the Epic Rides DVDs, and I think you will too. And they are very well priced, including, of course, the bundle we've been talking about, the Fredcast Texas bundle, where you get both Texas DVDs, Epic Austin and Epic Texas Hill Country, and you save money. Either one of the DVDs, you will save $10 off the price, or get the bundle and save a total of $20. That's Epic Rides DVDs. You can find them at epicplanet.tv/Fredcast, or just go to thefredcast.com and click on the Epic Rides link. We thank you for supporting Epic Rides, and we thank Epic Rides for supporting the Fredcast. Moving to the world of professional cycling, let's check in on the status of the Alberto Contador case. Earlier last week, a spokesman for Contador, Jacinto Vidarte, said, quote, "He's disappointed because he's innocent and feels he's being unfairly punished," unquote. And specifically, Vidarte is commenting on the Spanish Cycling Federation's ruling recommending a one-year suspension for Contador's positive doping test during the 2010 Tour de France for the banned substance clenbuterol. By now, I'm sure you know that Alberto Contador is claiming that the clenbuterol entered his system as a result of some potentially tainted beef that he and several other teammates ate during the Tour de France that was brought to France by someone from Spain. Contador has been given some advice by Astana team manager Giuseppe Martinelli in a recent newspaper interview when he said that Contador should, quote, accept the ban and start again. Continuing, Martinelli said, quote, "There are times when you have to make a choice. Either you bash yourself against a rubber wall or you find the courage to start again." Contador, for his case, was quoted as saying, quote, "Why should I accept a one-year ban if I did absolutely nothing? It sincerely does not seem like the right step." Contador has vowed to appeal the sanction of the Spanish authorities and has also lashed out against the World Anti-Doping Agency, the UCI, and anti-doping practices worldwide, saying, quote, "Today, advances in science are able to detect minute amounts of some banned substances, which neither further athletic performance nor can possibly be taken voluntarily, except if they enter our bodies through ingested food. This is my case with clenbuterol. But whereas scientific advances have arrived in the year 2011, the rules remain stuck in the 1960s, hence my, quote, crime, unquote, and possible sanction." Contador continued by saying, quote, the rules governing elite sports nowadays detail a list of substances that are taken by some athletes to improve performance, leaving the rest of the competitors at a disadvantage. And one of those substances is clenbuterol. Only by combining scientific advances with modifications to the anti-doping rules will it be possible to talk about honest and fair sport as I have always practiced it, unquote. Also, Contador has called the potential imposition of a one-year ban, quote, shameful, and said that it makes him feel like he is a, quote, victim of the system, unquote. Meanwhile, according to the New York Times, Contador's lawyer Andy Ramos has written an email saying that he thinks that the Spanish Federation misinterpreted several anti-doping rules in making its decision. And he said that he's challenging the Federation's understanding of the definition of, quote, no fault or negligence, unquote, that is detailed in the UCI's anti-doping rules. According to the New York Times, it says a rider would not be at fault if, quote, he did not know or suspect and could not have reasonably known or suspected, even with the exercise of utmost caution, that he had used or been administered the prohibited substance or prohibited method. Now, according to Ramos, again, Contador's attorney, they are going to use the very same defense that professional tennis player Richard Gasquet used recently, and they're going to use that defense as precedent in Contador's case. Now, if you're not familiar with Richard Gasquet, no worries, neither was I. I had to look it up. Apparently, the International Tennis Federation and the World Anti-Doping Agency filed a case against Gasquet in 2009 when he tested positive for cocaine. Gasquet had argued that the way that cocaine entered his system had to have been from when he kissed a young woman while dancing at a disco, and she must have ingested cocaine, and that he never did. The Court of Arbitration sided with Gasquet, ruling that Gasquet had probably tested positive for cocaine because of the woman that he kissed. There is another case of a cyclist being banned for clenbuterol, the case of Italian cyclist Alessandro Colo, who received a one-year ban from the Italian Olympic Committee for testing positive for clenbuterol after saying that he ate tainted beef in Mexico. Colo said that the committee ruled that he should have known that clenbuterol was often found in Mexican meat. It's quite possible that the same will be said about Contador when he tries to make the Gasquet defense. This case has been and will continue to be interesting, convoluted, and complicated. If the name Ricardo Rico sounds familiar, that's because he was at one time a promising and up-and-coming professional international cyclist. You may recall that in 2008, he tested positive for the EPO derivative Sera and received a 20-month suspension from professional cycling as a result. Rico recently returned to professional cycling and had been racing with the Ceramica Flaminia team earlier this season before moving to the Pro Tour license hopefuls Vacan Soleil. Earlier this week, it was reported by the media that Rico was admitted to an Italian hospital with reported kidney failure and that he was in critical condition. It has now come out that Rico purportedly told a doctor in the hospital that the reason he was so ill was because he was self-administering homologous blood doping for a blood sample that he had been storing in his refrigerator for a number of weeks. Not doing this under the careful and watchful eye of a more capable and more knowledgeable doping scientist, if you will, Rico infused himself with blood that perhaps had gone bad and therefore put himself into this situation, into the hospital, and now into a potential investigation by the Italian Olympic Committee for suspected blood doping. Rico is being skewered on Twitter, on Facebook, and all over the internet. Everyone assuming that if this investigation proves these allegations, that Rico stands to possibly see a lifetime ban from professional cycling. Meanwhile, in the Middle East, the Tour of Qatar is underway. It runs from February the 6th through February the 11th. Lars Boom denied Fabian Cancellara of his first time trial victory of the season, beating the World and Olympic time trial champion Fabian Cancellara on Sunday in the prologue in a time of 3 minutes 7 seconds, beating Cancellara by 4 seconds. In that same stage, Mark Cavendish from Team HTC Highroad suffered cuts and bruises to his face and broke his helmet after bunny hopping over a speed bump. After 3 stages of the Tour of Qatar, Heinrich Hausler from Australia is in first place, 9 hours, 34 minutes, and 30 seconds, followed by Mark Renshaw from Team HTC Highroad, 4 seconds back. Daniela Binotti is in third, 15 seconds back. We'll have the final results of the Tour of Qatar on the next episode of the Fredcast as the Tour of Qatar ends on February the 11th. The aforementioned Tour of Qatar is run by the Amaury Sports Organization, the same group that puts on the Tour de France, and it was announced recently that Germany's main TV stations, ZDF and ARD, have announced that they will stop carrying live coverage of the Tour de France in 2012 because they believe that the doping scandals that have rocked the Tour de France year after year after year after year have diminished the event to what they call, quote, low acceptance by their viewers. They will broadcast the Tour de France live in 2011 because they do have an existing agreement, but they will not join a new European Broadcasting Union contract with the ASO after 2011, meaning that German fans of professional cycling will have to resort to some of the same procedures that many of us here in the United States have to resort to when we are looking for live coverage of cycling events that U.S. television networks deem unpopular as well. Good luck, fellas. This week, the Amgen Tour of California announced details for stages 1 through 3 of the event that takes place May 15th through the 22nd, 2011. They also announced new anti-doping plans and a new anti-doping program to start pre-race testing earlier and to have USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency, instead of the UCI, oversee the anti-doping testing program during the May 2011 race. Essentially, what this means is they've dropped a certain provision that was excluding riders who were the subjects of a pending doping investigation. By so doing, they've opened the door to one Lance Armstrong, who, as you know, is the subject of a federal grand jury investigation into potential fraud, money laundering, conspiracy, and other charges as a result of Lance Armstrong's involvement in the United States Postal Service team and federal prosecutors' investigation into whether or not funds from that team were used to finance a doping operation of the team. Now, the Amgen Tour of California and the United States Anti-Doping Agency are not specifically saying that this rule change and this program change in their anti-doping program is specifically intended to open the door for Armstrong, but many commentators believe that whether that is the intended result, it certainly is an unintended consequence of the change in the program. Meanwhile, the UCI has announced that races outside of Europe are required to invite top-ranked continental teams to their races, meaning that the Amgen Tour of California is going to have to consider which continental teams will be included and which traditional invitees to the Amgen Tour of California will have to stand on the sidelines as a result of this new rule. Last week, Andrew Messick, the president of AEG, the organizer of the Amgen Tour of California, when he was contacted by Velo News, said he hadn't heard of the new rule, saying, quote, "No one from UCI has communicated this to us. We've not been contacted by the UCI whatsoever. We haven't been notified of anything by the UCI or the USAC. Until we are, we have no comment or reaction. But chances are, based on this new ruling by the UCI, the Amgen Tour of California is indeed going to have to alter their team invitations." And just a quick reminder for those of you who are focused on the world rankings in professional cycling, the next UCI road calendar event is Paris-Nice, taking place March 6th through the 13th, 2011. And with that, here ends the news for this episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Well, a couple of shows ago, I sort of previewed what's ahead for the Fredcast in 2011. And one of the things I mentioned was my upcoming trip to the Maratona of the Dolomites, the Marathon of the Dolomites in northern Italy. And I'm going with Ciclismo Classico. I had the opportunity to speak with Davide from Ciclismo Classico last week, specifically because I thought that it would be interesting for you to learn a little bit about the Maratona, a little bit about Ciclismo Classico, and about what makes them different as a cycle tour company. We've talked to a lot of cycle tour companies over the years, and it is always interesting to me to see the differences in the way that they put their tours together, and I am very much looking forward to going to Italy with Ciclismo Classico, especially after having sat down and had this conversation with Davide. We talked about his background, about Ciclismo Classico, we talked about the Maratona, and all of it will leave you wanting to go do the Maratona, to go on a cycle tour in Europe, and trust me, it left me hungry and wanting some Italian wine. I think whether you've been considering a cycle tour in Europe or not, you will get a lot out of what Davide had to say, so enjoy the interview with Davide from Ciclismo Classico. On the line today, I have Davide Marchegiano. Did I say that right, Davide?
Perfect.
Oh, good.
And hi, everybody.
It's good to have you here on the show. Davide, you are from Ciclismo Classico Tours. We don't know how many people in our audience are familiar with your company. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, Ciclismo started in 1988. From the passion of the founder, Lauren Heffron, who came to Italy and didn't leave for a while. So it was not only born from the passion for traveling and touring, rather from living into a place. And that's what we continue to do and share. We live here. I'm now in Ivrea, in the northwest of Italy, and this is where I oversee and coordinate all the operations in Europe from. And most of our guides are in Italy, in Europe. They are either locals or people who've lived there for years and years. And actually, some of them know Italy better than most of the Italians. Our goal is to take our guests and host our guests as if they were our relatives visiting, which is, to me, the best way to visit a foreign place.
One of the things that you said that interested me is that part of the core of the company is to give people the experience of living in a place. And you said that it gives them a better opportunity to know the place. Explain that for people, because I think that people who have not been on a bicycle tour may not understand what you mean.
It ranges through the different aspects of a trip. See, if you go to a place and who leads you there knows the routes, they schedule the routes for that tour, it's okay. But then if you go with someone that knows every other side roads, that has lived there and, stops at the bar for a cafe, and there comes Giacomo from the village, and tells you of a story of their ancestors who moved to the US. That's a whole different experience.
I did a cycle tour in France 2 years ago, and I came back raving about the fact that it is, I've been to Europe before, but that this was the most intimate experience that I had had. Does that sound familiar to you?
Yes, and it's really for me even better than doing it myself. If I take someone to one of the villages where I always ride to, and we bond with the locals, that's really something that sticks in my mind, and for what they tell me, also in our guest's mind forever.
Very nice. What do you think distinguishes Ciclismo Classico from other cycle tour companies? Because there's so many options out there for people. What is the one thing that you tell your customers makes you different?
I would pick our tour leaders first. And for something that is similar to what I just said about living, we do train our tour leaders, of course. We have our own protocol for emergencies and constant awareness and so forth. But what really makes a difference is that when Frank talks to people about the Campagnolo drivetrain and the bikes, it's not because he studied on a guidebook on cycling and mechanics. He owned a shop for 20 years. He imported Campagnolo to the US, and that's his life. When Dina takes people into a church and shows the frescoes, she didn't study on some painter's study book. She's an artist. She has her own exhibitions on in different parts of Italy and the US. So that's her life. And the same goes on for our tour leaders who were in the national team, cycling team of Italy. Again, they take you to a race, and that's what their life is or was for several years. And that goes to wine. We have three tour leaders who are top-level sommelier, certified as a professional sommelier, and some others have different levels of sommelier certifications. Again, they don't study or practice it so that they can be a tour leader. They do it in first place because they love it and because they would do it regardless, and they've been doing it for years, even before they started leading tours. So what they share has a depth, and I might say an authenticity that is probably different than many others.
Now, tell me a little bit about yourself. How long have you been with the company, and what exactly do you do for the company?
I've been with Ciclismo since 1999. I started as a tour leader. Then I was in charge of the technical aspects of the bikes and the gear here in Italy. And now I'm the manager of the operations in Europe. So I oversee all the aspects of the trips. I'm in charge of the guide team, of hiring and training, and I coordinate the research and development on our itineraries.
Now, we've talked to, obviously, the company is called Ciclismo Classico, so it sounds Italian. You're in Italy and you're Italian. Do you only do, I know the answer to this, so let me ask it a different way. I know that you do trips all over Europe, but are you specialists in Italy, specialists in Europe? How would you answer that?
Our core is in Italy. We have trips all over the country here, and we just applied the same way, the same tradition, according to which we've been running things to other countries in Europe. We went there. Some of us lived there in France. Gabriele moved to France for 4 years, and then we started researching, contacting local people, and developing trips there. So for sure, Italy has been there ever since, and that's the most represented country our trips offer. But the other trips in Europe that we offer share the same authenticity and model.
I was looking through your brochure, your catalog. First of all, it's beautiful. The photography, the descriptions of the trips, it's something I sort of put out on my coffee table, and when my guests come to my house, they look at it. They think it's gorgeous. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But I was looking through your catalog, and something that struck me, two things. First of all, the number of trips that you do every year, there just is such a wide variety of dates that you offer, and also a variety of skill levels. Tell everybody about that.
That's also interesting. I come from a racing background. I raced as a semi-pro in Italy. But I really, truly enjoy taking people to the races as much as I do taking a beginner's cyclist on a totally flat trip and sharing the accomplishment of riding maybe even just 40 miles or 30 miles, because that's, the most they've ridden that far. And so we do offer trips for any cycling ability, and really anybody who commits to such a trip can do it. We of course have van support, but we would rather have guests experience the whole ride. So when we design a beginner's trip, we don't imply that you ride 30 miles and then you shuttle. If you're tired, you can shuttle, but the trip is designed so that at that level, you can lead the whole ride from door to door of the hotel, which I think is the greatest accomplishment of doing such a trip.
You make a very, very good point about accomplishment. Here you are, let's say you're an American and you're coming to Europe, whether it's for the first time or just for your first cycle tour. Going from the door of your hotel to the door of the next hotel, no matter what the distance is, having experienced it with a spouse or a friend, and then having had the experiences along the way, meeting people, talking to whether it's other cyclists or pedestrians, or stopping in a little cafe, and then arriving at your hotel again, people have told me that simply walking into the hotel in their cycling clothes, they sort of have a The word we would use is a swagger. They're walking very confidently, and people in the hotel know that they just rode here on their bicycle. It really does complete the experience, doesn't it?
It certainly does, and not only people in the hotel welcome them that way, but if you take a trip on a bus and you stop in a village, maybe you like overcrowd that village immediately, and people don't look at you very friendly. When we get to a bar by bike, people just stop and stare at us and ask questions, and everybody feels like a hero, regardless of the amount of miles or climbs, if any, that you did that far.
Yeah, I've had that experience. I know I'm smiling because I know what you mean. It's very true, and I think that goes back to the word I used earlier, which is it provides an intimacy to the trip and as you said, it really allows people to become immersed in a country, in a place, in a culture, and gives them a deeper understanding, because they're at ground level. They're not in a car surrounded by metal and glass. They're really living in that place. So I think that's really wonderful. Now,
Yes,
yeah, go ahead.
I think that's experiencing versus seeing, because
Good
you can
point.
see things and it's fine. If you immerse yourself into the experience, you get to really get more. You hear the sounds, you smell the scents from the nearby fields. It's a whole different experience, and you also change yourself, because when you get around in Lycra clothes, the barriers, the shields that we all have in our everyday life are torn down. Like, it's you and landscape, you and the people you meet very close.
Very well said. Now, beyond the cycling, because we can only cycle a certain distance every day or for a certain amount of time every day, What else will people experience on one of your trips?
Well, the mix of the ingredients changes according to the type of trip and also the athletic level. There's a mix of tasting wines, savoring and sampling the foods from the area, going to see how the artisans of the area work, or maybe how a winemaker makes their own Vin Santo, drying the grapes after the harvest. So you have a wide range of experiences and encounters with local artisans or producers, and the mix of it depends on the type of the trip.
Sure.
Clearly, a trip going to a race has the cycling part maximized. You want to ride as much as you can, you climb epic climbs, and then you want to rest. Then, of course, you have a great meal, you might go to some events. Whereas if you go from Venice to Bologna, it's totally flat, you go through Ferrara, you may want to stop every other corner to take a picture. You have endless bars to stop and have an espresso, a cappuccino, a cornetto, and then there will be a wine tasting, a cheese tasting, and so forth. So the mix of these ingredients changes and makes for a different experience depending on the trip you choose.
Wow. I can't wait. Now, I'm coming with you in July to do a very famous event, the Maratona. Tell everybody about the event. And of course, on the trip, we'll be leading up to it. The Maratona is sort of what we would call the icing on the cake or the real great finale of the trip. But tell everybody about the Maratona.
The Maratona of the Dolomites is the best known, most important Gran Fondo race. It's called the New York Marathon of Cycling, and it gathers between 8,000 and 9,000 riders every year to race and ride up the Dolomite passes that made the history of the Giro d'Italia, and therefore of cycling. It starts in Corvara, and it's really an event for the riders and for all the towns and valleys that you go through, because they stop everything. The roads are shut for up to 6 hours, even more than most of the roads at the Giro d'Italia or the Tour de France. And each village sets up a local folk band, a refueling stop where you sample not only the electrolytes and power bars, but the strudel, which is the typical sweet of the Dolomite area. So it's a race, but there's much more to it than the racing itself.
So
And the
you
core.
and now of course I've also like a lot of Gran Fondos, there are people there who their whole goal is to finish first, but there are also people there who just simply want to finish, right?
Yes, there's a whole range. Of course, if you are up ahead, you'll battle for the best position you can. But the line of riders is endless. I think that my most vivid memory of racing the Maratona is getting to Arabba, which is the beginning of the Passo Pordoi, and seeing the road up the Passo Pordoi. There are more than 30 hairpin turns up there, and you couldn't even see the asphalt of the road. It was an endless line of colorful riders going up there, and that was amazing. And you can ride at any pace
Sure.
you'd feel comfortable with. There'll be always someone ahead of you, and someone next to you, and someone behind you.
And there's also different distances, right?
Yes, they have three courses. The longest one, the most challenging, is 138 kilometers, 86 miles, and 13,000, almost 14,000 feet of elevation gain.
Ouch.
That's tough. That's a challenge. You have miles and climbs as much as you could wish for. The toughest one is the Giao, which is, well, when you get to the top, you'll be glad you made it and that it's over. But then you have a shorter 66 miles course, and then the shortest is 34 mile, which is what they call the Sella Ronda. The Sella is a massive of mountains in the middle, and this course goes around the Sella with four passes, the Campolongo, the Pordoi, the Sella, and the Gardena, and you go back to Corvara. Neither one of these climbs is really tough. They are long, but you can, you know, ride at your own pace. You stop when you need, and you get to the top. So completing this course obviously requires some training, but it's not impossible, and you get the best of it, because the Sella Ronda is for sure the best. On top of the Pordoi, you have a beautiful view on the Sella. The next valley is the Marmolada, the known glacier there with the Passo Fedaia. And then the final downhill to Corvara is spectacular. So you can really climb all the climbs that made the history of cycling and experience the whole race with a limited effort.
Nice. What happens... to switch gears on you for a moment, what happens if you have someone who wants to come on one of your tours, and their husband or their wife also wants to come, but or their friend, but they're not a cyclist? What sort of arrangements do you make for them?
Well, we put together a package that includes some activities, sightseeing, visit to local museums or artisans, and transfers so that they can spend some time in Bolzano, which in this case is the largest and probably nicest town in the northeast of Italy, in the Dolomite area, with a lot to see. The museum, the prehistorical museum, there's a gondola leading up to a plateau where you can, you know, take an easy hike, but that still shows you the Dolomites all around. And then you transfer to Corvara to spend the 3 days there, so they can still enjoy the atmosphere of the race. Even though they don't race, it's something that you can really enjoy. And they can take hikes around Corvara to any of the peaks around there, or just at the bottom of the valleys. There are plenty of trails there.
Yeah, see, that's really important, because I get a lot of people who say, oh, I really want to go on a cycling tour in Europe. I want to do something very exciting like this, but you know, my wife doesn't ride, or my boyfriend doesn't ride, and I really want to go, but I can't spend the money unless, you know, on a vacation, unless they can go too. So it's nice that they have that option available. The other question I had for you was, I was looking over your brochure, and I see for the high-end racing fan that you also have tours that follow, well, a very famous race in France and also a very famous race in Italy. Tell me briefly about that.
Yes, we take people to watch the stages, and we follow the Giro as the Italians do, or the race in France as the French do, which means riding a part of the climb that is scheduled for that day on the race. And then we just lean our bikes on a meadow, and we have sandwiches and local super snacks and products, and wait for the racers to show up, which is not a boring wait, because the people who line up the road are a feast to watch on its own. Like being in there and spending the time waiting for the racers is just as amazing as seeing the peloton come by. And then there's a whole line of, you know, the team cars. So really watching the racers themselves is a part of it.
Sure.
Clearly, that's what you come from. But there's a lot more that you can enjoy. And if you've never been to a race, you'll be surprised to see how we live it. You know, the entire town's closed when the Giro d'Italia goes by. The teachers take the children from schools to see the race. It's really a feast for all the places that are touched by the race. And we are in it.
And
And then
I
we.
think what you just described is what you said earlier. It's that immersion, that intimacy of being a part of the event as well as watching the event, right?
Yes, that's what we'd rather not set up, our own huge space at the top of the climb, separate from anybody else, because you do see the race, but you miss a part of it.
Sure.
Whereas if you line up with the other people, of course we make sure that we provide lunch and assistance and everything, but we would like to have guests as close as possible to the action and to the festa that goes on along the road.
Makes sense. Well, I'm very, very much looking forward to coming in July, and I hope a lot of our listeners will join us or, join any of these other tours that we've talked about. I guarantee you, people now want to get more information. Where can they get more information on Ciclismo Classico?
Or they can visit our website, www.ciclismoclassico.com, or call our office in Arlington, Mass at the 1-800-866-7314. And my colleagues will be there to assist people with answering to their questions. And if there's any further need for insight, we are in touch every day. So it's not we often contact the local guides or tour leaders for any additional insight or piece of information that may be needed by any guests.
Well, Davide, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today and learning more about Ciclismo Classico. I can't wait to come in July, and thank you so much for joining us on the Fredcast.
Thank you, and I look forward to seeing you at the Maratona and to see other riders in Italy and Europa.
Two things that I should mention about that interview. First of all, of course, thank you to Davide and to Ciclismo Classico for the interview. Thank you, of course, also for hosting me on this tour coming up. But two things that I wanted to mention. Number one, we talked about this spouse option or significant other option for going on the Maratona trip. Davide wanted me to mention that that is specific to the Maratona trip. So if you're thinking of going, know that that is available to you. But Ciclismo Classico has also offered some special deals for Fredcast listeners. If you go to ciclismoclassico.com/Fredcast, they're offering $300 off any of what they call their Campione series trips, and that is the Maratona trip, the Giro d'Italia trip, and the one following the Tour de France. And if you are interested in any other of their departures, they're offering $250 off any of their other departures simply by mentioning that you are a Fred when you give them a call or check their website. Please note that space on all the trips is limited and new registrants can only be accepted on the Maratona trip until February 28th. So please book now. One of the questions I get asked frequently this time of year when many of us are stuck inside for our cycling is, David, how did you set up your indoor cycling training room? Well, I'll tell you about how I set mine up, and along the way, I'll give you some hints on how to set yours up, both on a budget level and also on a more expensive level as well. Let me sort of give you the layout of my room. I've got a very, very small room in my basement that is right off of my utility room. My utility room is where my furnace is and my water heater, my circuit breakers, my water softener, those kinds of things. And right off of that, there's a very small room. I think it was originally intended just as perhaps a storage room, and I've turned it into my trainer room. Now, when I walk into my trainer room, the very first thing I see is my bike set up on my CompuTrainer, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a minute. The bike is, and the CompuTrainer are sitting atop a training mat, and the front wheel of the bike are on a wheel block. Back to all of that in a moment. Directly in front of my bicycle is a inexpensive PC. It's actually running Windows XP. And next to where on top of the PC is an external monitor, next to that is an LCD projector, and next to that a television. In front of the television, there is a fan. And you know what? Much of that will probably make up your trainer room, and some of it may be unnecessary for you. But let me go through a couple of things here, the most basic of which is obviously you need your bicycle and you need some kind of a trainer. Now, I've talked about this before. I use a CompuTrainer. A CompuTrainer uses an electronic resistance unit, which provides resistance to the rear wheel based on what's called an ERG file, ERG simply meaning power. So if I'm using the base CompuTrainer software and I'm using an ERG file that was perhaps provided to me by the CompuTrainer folks, or one that was provided to me by my coach, or perhaps one that's based on a GPS file of a ride that I do all the time, as I get to a portion of the ride where there's a hill, the resistance increases in proportion to the grade of the hill, and I get a realistic road feel on the rear end of the bicycle. But let's be honest, a CompuTrainer isn't cheap, and you don't need to have a CompuTrainer in order to get a good indoor workout. CompuTrainer is going to run you about $1,600, $1,700. So unless you're prepared for that, then let's talk about the other kinds of trainers on the market. Well, one of the trainers that I talked to you about recently was one that I saw at Interbike in 2010, and that is the LeMond Revolution Trainer. Now, the LeMond Revolution Trainer is the first non-electronic trainer to give the most realistic road feel. And here you're talking about a trainer for about $500, and one, by the way, which does not require you to use your rear wheel because it has a cassette built in. Very revolutionary. I know it's called the Revolution. Sorry for the pun. Very revolutionary, a very high quality product, and one that I know that you would like. But more traditional trainers fall into a couple of categories. You have your fluid trainer, your magnetic trainer, and a wind trainer. Typically, fluid trainers are more expensive. Next would be magnetic trainers, and then the least expensive would be a wind trainer. But you do get what you pay for. You have almost an exponential resistance curve available to you on a fluid trainer, so you can vary that resistance almost infinitely. The resistance curve goes a bit more linear when you go to a mag trainer or a magnetic trainer, and then wind trainers, you don't get nearly as much adjustability as you do with the other two, but they are less expensive. And then, of course, there is the final type of trainer that you can consider, which is simply rollers. Now, the nice thing about rollers is you get a real good road feel, and of course, you have to balance yourself, so it's a good way to work on your spin, but the level of resistance is not as variable, so it's really more of a spin trainer, a positioning trainer, a balance trainer, and one that's really just good for aerobic training. Now, if you're going to go with pretty much anything other than rollers or the LeMond Revolution Trainer, one thing that you absolutely have to look at is a trainer tire. If you use the standard tire that you use out on the road, chances are that you're going to get a lot of blowouts. Therefore, you want to look at a trainer tire. I use the Continental tire. There's a number of others. And by the way, for everything that we're talking about here today, I do have links in the show notes, so keep that in mind as well. But definitely, you're going to want a dedicated trainer tire. A couple of other things you're going to want: a riser block underneath your front wheel so that you get a horizontal positioning of your bike and your body, or depending on the one that you use, you can find one that will also give you more of sort of a climbing position as well. That's the way that I like to ride my trainer, so that my handlebars are a little bit higher than they normally would be, simulating a climb. The other thing that I have is a trainer mat, simply something to protect the carpet in the room where my trainer is so that I don't get sweat all over the place. And then a lot of people like a sweat cover for the top tube of their bike as well. Now, in my setup, because I'm using a CompuTrainer, I do have a relatively inexpensive PC in the room, and that is to run the CompuTrainer software, which varies the resistance on the rear wheel. I also use it for running my training DVDs as well. If you're not going to be using a computer-controlled trainer, then just using a TV with a simple DVD player is a great way to go. And I always recommend the TV because you could use a wide variety of training DVDs that will keep you motivated. Among my favorites, we've talked about Epic Rides before. We've also talked about the Suffer Fest, and there's a myriad number of other DVDs and videos that you can use. And I put a link in the show notes. Spinnerville's is one. Carmichael has some. There's a lot of different ones that you can use. And I mix them up. I vary all the time. I don't just do one video all the time or one brand of video all the time because, quite frankly, I get bored kind of easily. So I want to have a lot of videos at my disposal. Another video that I use, which is pretty much specific to the CompuTrainer or the sister product of the CompuTrainer, the Velotron, are ERG videos. I've talked about those before. Simply, if I'm watching the video and the rider in front of me starts to have a higher power input, whether that's because he or she is going into a sprint or maybe taking a pull in a pace line or going up a hill, I feel the same level of resistance that they do relative to my threshold power on my rear wheel. And I really like that. Now, having said that, you may recall that I interviewed Paul Smulders from ERG Video a couple of months ago when I was in Ottawa and I had the opportunity to visit the ERG Video Studios. And he mentioned the new version of ERG Video and the high def videos. Well, as I mentioned, I'm using a relatively inexpensive PC running Windows XP, and that PC will not run those new HD videos or the new ERG video software. And Paul's chastised me for that. But you know what? To me, the PC that's in there, I don't want to spend a lot of money on. I use it maybe an hour or so a day, and it just is not in my budget to be putting in a high-end PC in there to run my trainer. So just know that if you're going to do that, you're going to have trade-offs. If you don't have the horsepower, you may not be able to run some of the higher-end videos. So again, I've got the computer with a monitor. That's where I put my main screen of my CompuTrainer software. And then I've got an LCD projector where I'm projecting the video of the riders with whom I'm quote unquote riding virtually. I also have a TV. I have speakers for playing the music that goes along with the videos as well. One final thing that I do recommend, however, is that you get yourself some kind of data management program. I use TrainingPeaks WKO Plus because it is the most comprehensive training software available, and I can share the data with my coach. So I've got a great dashboard with a lot of metrics and a lot of information so that I can monitor my progress. And most importantly, I can upload that to trainingpeaks.com where my coach can share that data and we can compare and discuss how I'm progressing in my training. So to recap, if you want a bare bones, inexpensive system, you take your existing bike, get yourself a trainer tire, and you get yourself the best trainer that you can afford. Again, whether that's fluid, mag, or wind, or electronic, like the CompuTrainer or the Tacx or something like that, or if you prefer rollers. So get the trainer, the best one that you can afford. Get a mat down underneath your trainer, get a block under your front wheel, and then consider what you're going to do to either entertain or motivate yourself, whether that's using the high-end training DVDs that vary the resistance on your electronic trainer, or whether that's just watching a DVD to motivate you, whether it's the Suffer Fest, which is definitely going to kick your rear end, or watching The Epic Planet DVDs, where you'll be riding in some very scenic locations but getting a great workout, or doing something like Spinnervals or Carmichael or any of the other DVDs out there to motivate you, or whether it's just going to be sticking the earbuds from your MP3 player in your head, sticking up a Tour de France poster, maybe some Graham Watson photos on the wall in front of you, and just hammering out the miles and putting the power into the pedals to get yourself in shape. Set up your trainer room, get it going, use it frequently so that when the snow melts and the temperature rises, you're out there on the roads and you are in shape. Whether the rest of your team, whether your buddies are, you're going to be in shape because you put in the miles in your basement in the deepest, darkest days of winter. Again, there are links in the show notes to the things that I discussed here on the show. I love to see pictures of your trainer room setup or get some descriptions of what works for you. And let me tell you how you can contact me. So our website is www.thefredcast.com and my email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. Of course, you can follow along on Twitter. Twitter handle is Fredcast. And please join our Facebook fan page, and there are links in the show notes and on the website. If you'd like to send in some audio comments, please call our Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Before we go tonight, I do want to thank our show sponsors, Jensen USA. Go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast, and that is where you are going to get a great selection of products at fantastic prices with unparalleled customer service. JensenUSA.com/thefredcast or Epic Rides. Epic Planet creates absolutely gorgeous cycling videos, and you can find that at epicplanet.tv/fredcast. And now it's time for one of my favorite portions of the show and something that I get a lot of feedback from you guys that you like as well. It's time for PodSafe cycling music. And tonight's PodSafe cycling music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by the Cadence Revolution, your weekly podcast of PodSafe music that's perfect for your indoor cycling, available at www.cadencerevolution.com. Tonight's PodSafe cycling music is called It's a Beautiful Thing, and it's by the Bone Drivers. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. We'll be back next week with another episode, but between this show and the next, thank you for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed. Thank you for telling your friends about the Fredcast Cycling Podcast. Between this show and the next, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.